Hi everyone. Welcome to Basic Crystal Healing Part 1. I'm Ashley Levy, founder and educational director of the Love and Light School of Energy Medicine, and also tonight's class instructor. So if this is the first time that you've ever joined us live, you'll see on the right-hand side of your box, there's a ton of activity going on over there. That's our chat box over on the right-hand side of the screen. Please feel free to type a little something, pop in a hello. Welcome, everybody. I see Jen and Ashley here so far. And there's Chantel and Debbie and Sharon, and the hellos are pouring in. So I am really excited that everyone is joining us tonight. I know many of the people couldn't be here live, so they'll be watching the recording later on in the future. So thank you all for coming tonight, hanging out with me and talking crystals a little bit. I am really excited to do this again so quickly. And in another couple months, we'll be doing our Sensing Subtle Energy with Stones and Crystals class. So welcome, welcome. Glad to have you here. Throughout the class, if you have any questions or need help, please go ahead and pop something over in the chat box. I'll check it periodically, try to make sure that I don't miss any of your questions. If for some reason I get a little bit far ahead of myself and it doesn't seem like I've answered your question, please do pop it in there again just in case I accidentally overlooked it. I'll also go ahead and add some links and things that I want you to pay special attention to during the class over in that chat box, so keep a good eye on that. And otherwise, I'll kind of be cutting in back and forth between the video here where you can see me and I can show you my smiling face, and then our class slideshow. So if you do have your slideshow handout available, it'd be great to print that out, or at least the first 20 or so pages for use in tonight's class. And if not, you're welcome to follow along with your slideshow on your computer screen and just listen to my voice either way, or you can watch the slideshow right here in class. So, oh, I see a ton more people popped in. So hello and welcome to everyone. I'm really looking forward to this. So we're going to go ahead and get started in the first part of our basic crystal healing class. I'll go through a few slides and pop back over and make sure I haven't missed any questions. So with that, we'll go ahead and start our basic crystal healing. So the first thing that I want to cover in this class are the different uses of crystals. And there are so, so many different uses for crystals. One of my favorites is crystal divination. This includes crystal omancy, which is also called crystal ball scrying. So when I talk about that, many of you may picture that iconic image of a gypsy looking into a crystal ball. But this is something that's still commonly used for kind of like fortune telling, for looking into the future, for getting symbols and information about where we're headed. Divination with crystals can also include pendulum dowsing, and of course a pendulum can be made from any material, but I feel that crystals work particularly well because they're such good amplifiers of energy. And then there's also lithomancy. This is also called stone casting. So you may be familiar with people doing casting with something like runes, which again can be made of stone, but stone casting or lithomancy typically uses a set of stones that the stone caster is very familiar with, and they're sort of casted or thrown onto a cloth or some sort of like separated area that's like a casting board or something similar to that. And then each stone has its own meaning, and the relationships of where the stones fall with one another in the casting area start to kind of paint a picture or tell a story with crystals. So divination, even though there's lots of different ways to use crystals in divination, divination itself is just one way that we can use crystals in our day-to-day lives. So another very common way to use crystals is for clearing and balancing the chakra centers and the aura. So because crystals work on an energetic level, we find that often they're used for treating or I guess working with the energy of the chakras or the aura. So getting right to the energetic roots or source of a problem and healing it that way rather than focusing just on the physical symptoms. Crystals can also be used to enhance your intuitive or psychic skills to further develop these skills. So you'll find that there are a lot of crystals that are good for things like channeling or meditation or shamanic journeying, astral travel. All these kind of fall into that intuitive development realm. So whether that's just for your own personal use, or if you wanted to pursue your skills as a psychic reader, crystals can really help you either way. So crystals are also wonderful for promoting oneness and universal consciousness. So they raise our energy vibration. They promote that feeling that we're all connected, that we're all part of one source consciousness, one source point of energy. And crystals really pull together energies from all over the world and all over the galaxy and can help us feel really tuned into that. And then, of course, just in general terms, crystals are used to heal the mind, body, and spirit. So, you know, a lot of people when they're first starting out with crystals just think of how crystals can be used physically. But when you use them emotionally and spiritually, that's really where you get the best benefit, because you're working on things more preventatively rather than just working on the physical body after something is already manifested as a problem. So with that, I don't see any questions in the chat box yet, so we'll go ahead and go to the next slide. So this slide really deals with how crystals heal. So how on earth do they actually work? This is a question that I get all the time. So crystal healing is really based on physics and the principles of energy flow or energy movement. So crystals have this really subtle energetic vibration, and it's based on their molecular blueprint. So what this means is that each crystal has its own unique crystalline encoding, which is basically based on how the molecules in that crystal are stacked and arranged. So all of those little atoms and molecules are stacked in a very precise way in each specific crystal. And this is according to their molecular bond angles. So this creates a really orderly form, both physically and energetically, and that results in this really perfect, stable energetic vibration. So if you think of a crystal as having this perfect, stable energetic frequency or resonance, and then you think of our own energetic frequency, which is not always so perfect and stable, right? I mean, think about just how something like your emotions can really influence the energy in your auric field, in your chakra centers, in your physical body. So think about how that energy in our field is shifting and changing all the time, right? So by bringing that perfect stable structure of the crystal into our own energy field, what happens is that our body and our energy field starts to go through the process of entrainment, and it starts to mimic that perfect stable resonance of the crystal's energy frequency. And so if a crystal's really good for promoting love, self-love, self-care, something like rose quartz, for example, its molecules are stacked in a way, and it has the ability to reflect and refract light of a specific color and vibrational frequency, that rose quartz, which is all about self-love, when we bring that into our own field, our field starts to vibrate at that same level, causing us to want to promote more self-love and self-care in our own lives. So that's just one way that crystals sort of work. But because each individual person has their own unique energy frequency, that resonance that created between your energy field and the crystal's energy field will vary slightly from person to person. So for some people, this is going to be a really harmonious vibration. So you bring that crystal into your energy field and you get a ton of benefit from it because it's just what you need in your field right now. Whereas for other people, they may not notice much change because maybe that's not what's truly needed in their field right now. And crystal healing is so subjective. And you know, there's a lot of people out there who are really skeptical of crystal therapy. And this is one of the things that they say all the time is, well, it should be able to be proven over and over and over with hard and fast empirical evidence if it really works. And my opinion on this is that because we're each in this constant state of fluctuation all the time with our energy, that bringing a crystal into our field that we don't really need isn't going to work for us the same way as bringing it into someone's field who really needs that energy. Think about it like this. And this is just, you know, a similar example, but if you had someone who was really ill and needed antibiotics and you gave them those antibiotics, it would probably help them, right? Whereas if you had someone who was perfectly healthy and you gave them antibiotics, they might not notice any change at all because it wasn't really what they needed at that time. So someone who really needs a rose quartz, if you introduce that rose quartz into their field, it might work wonders for them. And then if someone else tries to use that very same crystal, it might not work very well because it's just not quite what they need for their highest good right now. So it's kind of a simple way to kind of think about crystal energy and how and why it works with different people. So I'm going to take a break there. And I'm going to switch back over here and just see if anyone has any quick questions for me about those first few slides. I see a couple more people have joined us, so hello. I'm going to type a little hello in the chat box. So you do that by putting your mouse in that little white bar in the lower right-hand corner of your screen, typing your message, and then hitting enter. So if you do have a question, please let me know. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and move on to the history of crystal healing. Nope. Looks like everyone's doing pretty good so far, and I don't see any typing, so I'm going to go ahead and move forward. Okay, here we go. So this next section is all about the history of crystal healing. So one thing that's really fantastic about crystals is that they connect all cultures and civilizations. It's thought that crystal healing might date back as far as 25,000 BC. And I remember reading in one of my sources that there was a Siberian shaman discovered frozen in Siberia. So this person's body, this healer's body was recovered and studied by archaeologists. And when they found this frozen corpse, they found that this man was carrying a pouch of some medicinal herbs that were commonly used at the time, along with two clear quartz crystals. And it was thought by these archaeologists that the medicine man or shaman really revered these crystals as healing tools because they were kept in the same pouch as this very sacred herbal medicine. So really, really interesting that crystals could date back as far as 25,000 BC in human history, but we know for sure they at least go back to the ancient Egyptians. So you have to figure around 5,000 to 6,000 BC. And we know that because crystals were written about in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and there's quite a large section where different crystals kind of pop in and out with some of their historical uses, which is really, really interesting. And we find that crystals really start to become commonplace in ancient Greek society. So we see a lot of the first writings done by the ancient Greeks. So you have people like Pliny the Elder, you have Socrates, Theophrastus, all writing about stones, which is really interesting. And then working up more toward the Middle Ages, you have Hildegard von Bingen, who wrote a huge treatise all on the healing merit of stones, which is really, really cool. But even in cultures and civilizations that didn't rely as heavily on writing, we still see evidence that healing crystals played an important role. So Celtic, Mayan, Native American, Aboriginal, Indian, Chinese, and Tibetan traditions all use healing crystals as well. You also see some writings of healing crystals in the Old Testament. So some really interesting stuff there, as well as in the New Testament. And crystals are actually mentioned in the Bible over 200 times. So this is something I think that's important to note, just because I know many people, when they're opening up to the world of crystal healing, they get a little bit nervous because many people, at least in Western civilization, follow fairly strict Christian beliefs in many cases. And a lot of people aren't sure how other forms of spirituality fit in with those beliefs. I've had many people concerned that crystal healing is satanic or demonic in some way. And when I explained to them that crystals were actually commonplace up until the Middle Ages, and that they're even talked about and discussed in the Bible, it gives a little bit of sense of relief to people who otherwise are a little bit afraid of crystal healing because they don't quite have the background information to understand its origins and its roots. And really what happened is during the Middle Ages, people started to rely a lot heavier on what would be considered, I guess, new breakthroughs in medicine. So there's a lot of development in herbal medicine and taking things internally and using plant extracts and different things like that. And then people sort of pulled away from healing crystals, thinking that those ideas were outdated or occult. And so then as we progress further and further closer to modern day, we find a lot more reliance on modern medicine and working toward this symptom-based treatment where we continue with the minutiae of diagnosis and treatment on a medical level, but we get further and further away from treating the whole person. And that's what crystals were so wonderful for, because they aren't meant to be a substitute for conventional medicine, but they do work perfectly hand in hand with conventional medicine because they treat the energetic causes or sources of a lot of these physical problems that manifest slowly over time if the energetic part is left untreated. So by using crystals in conjunction with conventional modern medicine, you really get the best results. So I do see a few questions here. So I'm going to pop over and answer these quickly. So Ashley says, do you have a way to describe crystal healing to those who aren't in the know? So a really basic explanation of what crystal healing is that crystal healing is typically placing crystals on or around the physical and energetic bodies in order to promote an energetic shift or change in the person so that they're better able to fully heal and embody their best selves. So it's really about bringing you back to your perfect, healthy, whole state of being. And that's just done by bringing crystals into your field. And so I usually describe it just as that. Crystals on and around the physical and energetic bodies that are used to promote shift in the energy frequency of that person. And Debbie says she's a Christian, but she thinks that God put healing abilities in crystals too. I love it. Thank you so much, Debbie. And that, you know, that's like such a small amount of people that have that limited amount of thinking, I think, about the subject, but it does come up. I run a New Age shop in Madison, Wisconsin, and every once in a while, I have people who are so curious, but it's like they're just a little afraid because they don't understand it and they aren't familiar with it, and they just need some reassurance that this is really about doing good, fulfilling your life's purpose, being the best person that you can be, raising your spiritual vibration, getting more in touch and in tune with that spiritual and energetic part of yourself, and that doesn't have to diminish your faith at all. Ashley says she agrees with Debbie. It's a great way to look at it. And let's see. Oh, Kerma says this is something she's been thinking about recently. So yeah, they're definitely gifts from God. I love it. So I don't see any more questions. So that's just a bit about history. Let's get back into our slideshow, and I'll keep an eye on the chat box in case anyone else has some questions or comments that they want to pop in with. So basically, what I was saying is that as we move toward modern medicine, we got away from treating the whole person. And I really feel like that was a big detriment to the progression of modern medicine, because now sometimes, I mean, think of all the prescription ads you see on TV. You know, you can treat your sleep disorder, but it might cause bloating and indigestion and all kinds of other things, right? And that's because it's so focused on symptom-based treatment instead of looking at the person as a whole and trying to find the root cause of the problem. And that's what makes crystal healing a little bit different and a great complement to modern medicine. So moving into modern day, a little bit about modern crystal healing. So I want to mention this really important guy named Marcel Vogel, and we're going to talk about him when we get to the section on crystal shapes, because he was a huge pioneer for developing all kinds of really important shapes and crystals. But he was a scientist for IBM, and he was also a huge advocate of the healing power of crystals. And this is really significant because Marcel Vogel really came out with a lot of his work in the early to mid 1980s, all the way up into the early 1990s, in fact. And at the time that he first started coming out with some of his information on crystal healing, it was really seen as kind of a flaky, new agey type of thing, right? No one really took it seriously, but Marcel Vogel, being this really well-respected scientist for IBM, brought a lot of legitimacy to the field of crystal healing and brought a good scientific background that could help people understand why crystals could be used for healing and how they could be used for healing. So Marcel was one of the first people to draw the comparison between human DNA and the structure of quartz crystal. So at that time, most crystal healing practitioners were actually working just with quartz crystal. And the reason for that is because it's thought of as the master crystal, because it has this really strong connection to human DNA. So the way that the molecules in a quartz crystal stack is in a spiral structure, very similar to the spiral structure of human DNA. So Marcel pointed this out, and later on, we started to see all these amazing healers like Katrina Raphael and Melody start to work with all the different minerals of the mineral kingdom. But at the time of Marcel's work, most people like Marcel Vogel, Dale Walker, were just focusing on working with quartz crystals. So Marcel had this great revelation that the quartz structure is similar to our human DNA structure, and he also drew the comparison that both quartz and the human body both have really large amounts of silicon atoms. So he thought that there was this innate, like, harmonic resonance between quartz crystals and the human body because they had so many similarities. And I always find this really interesting that, yeah, someone really had to make those comparisons at first. So super interesting stuff. Remember Marcel Vogel when we get to our section on shapes, because it's super important. Jody has a really great question. So I'm going to stop our slideshow for just a second and answer this. So Jody asks, who assigned the metaphysical properties to each crystal and how did they come into that information? This is such an awesome question, Jody, because this is a really big topic, right? So I do have a little bonus video up on the class materials page that talks just about this, how these crystal properties are determined, and you'll also be getting a PDF handout of that in a couple weeks by email. And then there's also a blog post going up in 3 weeks about this exact topic. But let me give you a little sneak peek. So the crystal properties for each crystal come from a lot of different places. And if you look at one book and another book and another book, and you read all the entries for amethyst, you might find a lot of common similarities, but one source might list a property that's not listed anywhere else. And so how do they come up with these things? So there are a couple different ways that people come up with this information. So the first is based on these historical references. So going back to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the writings of Theophrastus, the writings of Hildegard von Bingen, and looking at what all those historical sources have to tell us. Now, where did those people get the information? So that was common belief or knowledge at the time that those crystals could be used to treat or shift energetically that specific thing in the body that they were trying to work with. So most of the ancient writings have to do with physical conditions that are being worked with the crystals to solve. But as we come into our more modern era of crystal healing, people started to be a lot more open to intuitive writings on crystals. So this could be channeled information. This could be information that was received during meditation, information that was received during shamanic journey, astral journey, that was received in the dream state. There are so many different intuitive ways to gather information about how a crystal can be used. Then what a lot of those people did is they actually tested this information out. So for example, Melody, who wrote the Love is in the Earth series of books, she had a system where if she found that a crystal worked for a specific thing, so say she found that celestite worked for enhancing angelic communication, she had to repeat that three times with three different people in hands-on crystal healing work before it was listed as a property in her book. So she had to replicate this with a few different people before it was listed as a property. If she couldn't replicate that property three times, it didn't go in the book. Whereas other people like Katrina Raphael, a lot of that information was just channeled. So it was her connection to source energy or to some spirit guides, and that information was brought down and channeled into her book. I kind of use a combination. So for me, a lot of times I'll be given information about crystals in my dream state or during meditation, and then I'll try those things out with some of my clients and see how they work. And if I find that it works for a majority of people, that's a pretty good bet then that it will work for many people in that way. However, for example, a lot of different resources list amethyst as a stone that's really good for treating headaches. If I use amethyst when I have a headache, it just amplifies the problem. My headache gets really intense, and I think it's because amethyst is a variety of quartz, which is a natural amplifier, and it's also a crown chakra stone, a higher energy stone. And if I have a headache, it's because there's usually already too much energy, and the amethyst seems to add more energy to that for me. So it's not a good fit for me, but it works very well for other people. So that's kind of what I was talking about before with there's a lot of places where this is open to interpretation, and it's very subjective because it's based on personal experience. So although it's totally good to go look at those sources and determine how you might want to use a specific crystal, following your own intuition and inner guidance is always best because you're likely to get the best results from your crystals when you work with them that way. So I hope that answers that question. Okay, and let's see. And Jen says she personally believes that since everybody's energy vibration is different, everyone reacts differently to different crystals. Those properties in books are more of their own experiences, just what she thinks. I couldn't agree more. That's exactly, totally what I'm saying. So it's just that, you know, people are writing their best guess as to what will work for most people, but it's not necessarily going to work for everyone that way. So never get frustrated or think that there's something wrong with you or anything like that if a crystal doesn't work for you in that way. You know, we all just have different frequencies, and each crystal has its own frequency. So you might connect really well with one piece of rose quartz and not with another. It just depends. Okay, and Jeannie says she has a good friend who knew Marcel Vogel and once had Vogel come to his house to teach his children how to cut crystals. Her friend gave her a small crystal Vogel cut. It's not a Vogel cut, but a seer stone cut by him. So it is a Vogel cut crystal. How cool is that, Jeannie? That's awesome. Not many people had the pleasure of working with Marcel Vogel, but there are some amazing recordings available of his lectures and his teachings on crystals. So I'll put a link here for everyone. It's VogelCrystals.net, and you can go there, and there's a ton of information about Marcel Vogel. There's some great recordings and things like that. I know there are also some awesome YouTube videos out there, so if anyone wants to pop a couple links into the chat box for those, please feel free. But there's a lot of his information was recorded so that we can still learn from it today, which is really great. It's a total treasure. Okay, so let's go back over to our slideshow and keep going with our modern crystal healing. And I have just a little bit of a lag here. I'm hoping it's not too bad on your end. There we go. Okay. Ah, now I see it on the screen. All right, sorry for the delay. My internet connection is a little bit on the slow side today, so. Okay, so that takes us through modern crystal healing. Now I just want to touch on some of these golden rules of crystal healing. Even though this is a basic class, I think it's really important to have this information because for some people, this is all the information you'll ever want to know about crystals. So I like to get this in here early. So first of all, whenever you are doing crystal healing on someone else, you're always acting as a conduit or channel for the healing energy. So you're never depleting your own energy by giving it to the client. You are bringing it from universal source through you into the stone and then into the person that you're working on. So this is never coming from you. You also need to really trust the energy that you're working with because crystals work best when their energy is directed by your intention. So I think that intention is such a huge part of crystal healing, and many people overlook this part. They just think that, oh, I need a crystal for this and this and this, and then my whole life is going to change and be amazing. And although that can happen, it will happen much faster and much better if you actually direct that energy with your intention. So whether that's an affirmation statement or, you know, visualizing the outcome that you want or just holding space for that in your life, you have to have clear intention when you're working with crystals because your results will just be that much better. Okay, and then a bit about the healing properties of stones, which we just touched on quite a bit. So that, just to kind of touch back on this, the common properties that are listed in most resources are those that typically work for many people. The ancient properties are those that come from more historical sources. Then there's also the different methods of getting this information. There's intuitive, channeling, meditation, your own personal experience, information that you get from healing sessions with clients, and that kind of thing. And the energy will actually differ from person to person and from crystal to crystal. So don't get, again, too hung up on that idea that a crystal has to work for you in that specific way. On to the next bit. So this is all about building a crystal healing toolkit. There's a link on the slide that goes right to a page on the website, but this list is also in your crystal healing manual. And I'm sorry, I forgot to point out, there are some page numbers in the upper left corner of all of these slides, and that's where you can find the information for each of these slides in your manual. Since I am presenting the information in a little bit different order, hopefully that'll make it nice and easier for you to refer to later if you're comparing the manual to the slideshow, so you can find what you're looking for. So this will be on page 34 of your manual for this list, or you can go to that link at the bottom of the slide, and that'll outline all the stones that I think are really important for having in your crystal healing toolkit. Okay, now I want to get into what is a crystal? And actually, before I touch on that, I see that Ashley Evans posted a really nice YouTube link to some Vogel videos. So thank you, Ashley, for posting that. You can see the link right there in the chat box. So I'm just going to copy that for myself really quick, and I will send that out a little bit later in an email for everyone so that everybody can check that out in case they missed the live class. Excellent. Okay, thanks so much, Ashley. So let's get back to our slideshow here. What is a crystal? And you can find this on page 4 of your manual. So a crystal has a regularly repeating atomic structure. We talked a little bit about that. So you can break down this crystal and see that All of those atoms and molecules within the crystal are stacked in a really precise way according to the geometry of the bond angles of those molecules or atoms. And this is really important because this is what gives a crystal its stable energetic frequency, that perfect harmonic resonance that a crystal has. And this is really, really important for crystal healing. But it's not the only thing that's important for crystal healing. So crystals also have the capability of absorbing or receiving and then transmitting light. So they can reflect and refract light energy. And this is really important because this kind of determines the colors that we see when we look at a stone, the way that the light is reflected and refracted off the internal structure of the crystal. And color energy and frequency has a lot to do with crystal healing as well. And we're going to go into the specifics of color energy in just a little bit, but I wanted to make sure that you know where that color is coming from. And it has to do with the way that light is moved through a crystal. So crystals are obviously, because we know that they can absorb and transmit light, capable of conducting energy, because light is just a form of energy. So because crystals can conduct energy, they make great conduits for the universal healing energy of light. Or, you know, sometimes we call this source energy, universal source energy. So this is why crystals are amazing healing tools. And crystals are also a member of the mineral kingdom. They are light beings. They are light tools. They're here to assist us with personal and planetary healing. And so they need to be treated with a lot of respect. They need to be cared for, and they need to be used for the highest good of all involved. And this is really important. So how do crystals form? So usually, but not always, they're formed inside of the earth through really intense heat and pressure in a process called nucleation. And as the crystals are forming, they follow that blueprint or crystalline encoding that stacks their molecules. So when that crystal is formed, there's a very specific way that the energy will flow through the crystal. And this has to do with the way that those molecules are stacked and arranged. So the energy of the crystal actually follows that molecular arrangement. So the crystals always form from the base toward the point or termination. So the molecules start forming and stacking at the base. So if you imagine you have, I'm going to go to my little visualization here. So you're going to have to bear with me for a moment, but you're all going to use your imagination. So imagine you have a pocket of air deep within the earth, okay? And there's some hot liquid mineral solution, and it's traveling through all kinds of nooks and crannies until it hits that air pocket. And when it hits that air pocket, the temperature there is slightly cooler than in the rock around where this hot liquid mineral solution was flowing from. So it hits that air pocket and it will actually start to cool and crystallize. And when that happens, the mineral solution will start to adhere to the outside of the air pocket and crystals will start to grow in toward the center of that air pocket. Now, if this happens very quickly, if it cools very quickly, you get tiny little crystals. And if it cools very slowly, you get larger crystals. But either way, these crystals are always forming from the base until they run out of solution, and that's when they form the point or termination of the crystal. So let's go back to our slide. So we have that base of the crystal, the mineral solution starts cooling, the molecules start to arrange themselves, moving in a quartz crystal at least, in a spiral structure from the base up toward the point or termination. The sides of the crystals are labeled by the arrow there. And then the sides that create the point or termination are called the faces. Now, some people call these facets, but some people also call the sides of the crystal facets. So I don't always think that's the best term to use because it can be a little bit confusing, especially because a true facet is actually a cut made by a lapidary person when they're carving gemstones. So that would be a true facet. So if you think of like a diamond ring, that would be faceted. So it's best to call these faces or sides in a natural crystal so that you can really distinguish what you're talking about. But because the crystal forms from the base toward the point and those molecules stack themselves in a nice spiral, the energy movement of that stone is always going to move from the base toward the point. And it moves along something called the C-axis. So the C-axis is just a name for an imaginary line that runs from the base toward the point of the crystal. And it's important to remember that the energy moves along the C-axis unless otherwise guided by our intention. And we'll talk about that more when we get to the section on crystal shapes, but I just want you to be familiar with that term. So now a little bit about crystal terminology. And before we get to that slide, I'm going to stop and answer a couple questions. Oh, awesome. Thank you. So Jen posted a link to the Crystal Healing Toolkit page. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And Sarah says, Ashley, is this a process that's continuing to occur even now? If you mean the crystal growth, once the crystal growth has started, there are many, many people that say it actually doesn't stop, that it will continue to grow and change over time. And many people claim to actually have this occur where they can see physical difference or change in their crystal. And I haven't personally had this experience, so it's really hard for me to speak to that. But one of my crystal teachers that I respect and admire a great deal, Melody, has talked about this at great length, and that crystals can and will and do change over time because they're constantly growing and changing. And Sarah says, are crystals forming in the earth that same way today? Absolutely. That's how all crystals are formed. And so you have crystals that are millions of years old, and you have crystals that are thousands of years old, and you have crystals that are just little babies that are just starting to form right now. So it's really interesting. It's not the same as like a fossil, though, that you know, was formed a long time ago, and that's the last one of that fossil that's ever going to be. As the earth keeps changing and shifting, and the new mineral solutions keep melting and cooling and melting and cooling and changing, we're going to constantly have new crystals and new crystal formations. And Jen says, can a crystal continue to grow once it's been removed from its original matrix? She's seen people mention that it looked like their crystal has grown since being in their care. Yeah, that's exactly what Melody was discussing, and I wish you know, that's something that I could speak to personally, but I just haven't had that happen. But it really piques my curiosity. And everyone always says the same thing. I wish I had a picture of this before it changed so I could compare the before and after. One of my other crystal teachers, the goddess Akia from Chicago, she actually says that you can intentionally manipulate the shape of crystals over time as well. She did an experiment in our class where she gave everyone a small piece of Faden quartz. That's F-A-D-E-N. And Faden is the German word for thread or string. And we'll talk about Faden quartz in one of the other classes where we talk about some of the formations of crystals. But she wanted us to sleep with the Faden quartz under our pillow for a week and not peek and not take it out and see if we could produce some sort of change in the crystal. And I couldn't do it, but a lot of people said they had more rainbows in their crystals. One woman was even really, really sure she had a tiny extra little point growing on her crystal. So I do think it's possible. I do think it can happen. I just haven't experienced it yet personally. Okay. And Sarah says it's so awesome to think about this happening as we speak, baby crystals being born. Yeah, isn't that a cool thing that it's happening right now? And so a lot of people think that the crystals that we actually have in our personal care, they're still connected and still really tapped in to the Earth's crystalline grid because there's constantly this shifting and changing of energy. So that amethyst crystal that you have is still very much connected to all of the other amethyst crystals on Earth and their energetic vibration that they carry. So kind of neat stuff. Okay, awesome. Well, let's go ahead and move on to our next slide. So this is a little bit about crystal speak terminology, and it's really important that we cover this section in this class because it's important for you to realize that there are two different groups of people that you might be speaking to when you're talking about crystals. So there's more the spirituality side of crystal terminology, and then there's the more scientific side of crystal terminology. And these do vary a little bit, so it's important to kind of have an idea of some of these terms because they'll change depending on if you're looking at a more scientific resource, like a guidebook, a field guide, or if you're looking at more of a new age or spiritual source, like just a book about crystal properties. And you'll see some of these terms change depending on the source that you're looking at. So, for example, metaphysical crystal terminology usually use the terms crystal, stone, gemstone, and mineral all interchangeably. It's kind of like, hey, we're new age crystal loving people, and we know what we're talking about when we say crystal or stone or mineral. We just kind of throw them around all interchangeably. But when you get into the scientific terminology, there are actually differences between these terms that might be important for you to know. So, based on our scientific terminology, a crystal is a mineral, any mineral, with a regularly repeating internal structure or crystalline lattice. So, this is what I've talked about several times. A crystal's molecules have to exhibit that precise arrangement or crystalline structure within that crystalline lattice. So, there has to be some type of regularly repeating geometry there. And if you break that geometry down to its very smallest part, you have what's known as the unit cell. So this is the very most basic part of a crystal's molecular blueprint. So if you could break it down to the smallest thing that you could still call a crystal, you'd have that unit cell. And so here's a picture of a fluorite unit cell so that you can see exactly what the smallest little crystal of fluorite could possibly look like. And you're looking at that on an atomic level. Very, very, very tiny. But the unit cell is something that is important to the crystal's geometric structure. Then we have another term that's really important, especially for quartz crystals, and this is piezoelectricity. This is Greek for squeezing energy. And what this means is this is a property that is seen in crystals that can generate energy, usually in the form of light, when pressure is applied to them. So think of that Greek for squeezing energy. Squeezing is a form of pressure. So when you put pressure on a quartz crystal, you'll actually see it light up because pressure or stress is put on the molecular bonds of the quartz. And as that stress is put on them, it creates energy that needs to be released somehow. So that energy is released in light. And so I'm going to show you a quick video so that you can kind of see this. And this is really cool. I won't play the whole thing, but I just want you to see what you're going to see in this video. There's a gentleman who is demonstrating piezoelectricity. It's also called triboluminescence. And he's doing this by rubbing two quartz crystals together in the dark, and you'll actually see them light up when that pressure is put on the crystal. So I'm going to go ahead and load this video, but first I think I have to stop the screen share. There we go. So I'm going to load this video and give you just a moment to see this really, really cool phenomena. So pretty cool stuff, right? I mean, that's just really neat. I actually tried this on my own. I had two little warrior crystals that were all bashed up that I really wanted to try this out with. And I went and turned the lights off in my office and started to strike them together. And you can actually see them do little flashes of light, which is really cool. Don't do this with your super prized crystal pieces. Mine didn't really seem to scuff each other at all with just two quartz crystals, but you never know, and you wouldn't want to chip anything. So just be a little bit cautious if trying this out, but it's really, really cool. So let's see. So Sarah had a comment about the last thing we were talking about. She wonders if crystals are being born to suit humans' changing needs. So a lot of people do think this, and Jen mentions this, that the crystals that are being discovered currently are crystals that are really needed by humanity at this time. So for example, sugilite was discovered, I think, in the 1960s. Larimar was fairly recently discovered. These are like new crystals on the market, and a lot of people think that we're finding them now because that's the type of energy that we really need for humankind right now. And so there could be crystals that are being born right now that maybe people will need in thousands of years from now, and they'll be uncovered at just the right time. Isn't that cool to think about? And Sarah says, is it possible that the energetic frequencies of a certain part of the world has anything to do with determining what crystals will grow or form there? Absolutely. And she says, beyond what could be explained through sheer geological considerations. So this is something that I think is possible because of my work with Aurelite 23 crystals. So Aurelite is a really special kind of amethyst that comes from Ontario, Canada, around the Thunder Bay area, but it's not the same as Thunder Bay amethyst. And Aurelite contains all kinds of inclusions, really trace amounts of precious metals that aren't very common to the area and are not really found in the other Thunder Bay amethyst crystals. So it has this really special, unique energetic vibration. It comes from this really beautiful place. I was just texting with Howard, the mine owner, a little while ago. He was sending me some photos of some of the pieces that he's found this year during his mining dig, and they are truly phenomenal pieces. So I do think that sometimes there are things that are very uncommon or very rare that form just because we do need those energies, even though they might be forming in a place that wouldn't otherwise normally support that kind of formation. It's a great question. And Jean asks, will a double terminated crystal have points on both ends? Yes, Jean, that's a very good question. So before I showed you how crystals form from the base toward the point, that's if they're growing off of what's called a matrix or a host rock or parent rock. So you have, think of like an amethyst cluster. You usually see that gray or brown base and then little purple amethyst points that stick up off of that. But some crystals form on other crystals, and they form complete crystals. And so these can form from one termination into completion all the way on either end. So usually actually form from the center outward, and they'll form two points or terminations. And those are called double terminated crystals. And they typically are resting on some other type of crystal with just very minor attachment to that crystal. But there are also crystals that can form in soft mud or clay, where they push their way through and form double terminations because there's some give there. They're not forming in hard rock. Then there's other crystals that form double terminated that are called floater crystals because they float in mineral solution that's different from the crystal that formed. So you'll often find floater quartz crystals that are either double terminated or even little clusters that are just formed all the way around, kind of like in a little spiky ball. Really cool stuff. Crystals are amazing. They can make so many different formations, but yes, they can definitely form two terminations. But you can also have double terminated crystals that are cut and polished into that shape. Okay. So I think that's all of the questions for right now. So let's pop on back over to the slideshow. Okay, so we saw piezoelectricity, a really cool demonstration of that, one of my favorite videos to watch. And now we're going to continue our scientific terminology with minerals. So minerals are technically composed of elements, which are the building blocks of the universe. And most minerals are composed of several elements, but there are some that are composed of just one. For example, bismuth is one that a lot of people are familiar with. That's just one element that makes up a mineral. So something important to note here is that all crystals and stones and gemstones are all minerals, but not all minerals are crystals. So if you think about this, what this actually means is that mineral is kind of an umbrella term for all those gems and crystals and stones, so they're all minerals. And then under that, we have crystals and we have not crystals, and we'll get to not crystals in just a second. But so there's all minerals, and some of those are crystals, meaning they have that perfect stable structure. But some of those are not crystals, meaning they don't have that perfect stable structure. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I just wanted you to get the idea. Minerals are all encompassing. Then we have crystals over here and not crystals over here. So all crystals are still minerals, but not all minerals are crystals, because not all minerals have a crystalline structure. So, cryptocrystalline minerals have a precise geometric arrangement of molecules, but you can only detect it on a microscopic level. So examples of this include agate, and there's a blue lace agate in the upper right there, jade, and chalcedony. And on the bottom, that's a piece of carnelian, and carnelian is actually a form of chalcedony. And chalcedony and agate are actually the same. Chalcedony also includes all the jaspers, except agate is banded and chalcedony is not. But otherwise, they're both cryptocrystalline varieties of quartz. So they have a perfect geometric arrangement that you can only see on a microscopic level. So it's so, so tiny, you can't see it with the naked eye. Whereas a regular crystalline mineral would have a large enough crystal that you could see it, like this one here. That's a crystalline mineral. These are cryptocrystalline minerals, because here you can see all those nice terminations and points. And here you wouldn't be able to detect that, because it's only on a microscopic level that it has that perfect geometry. Now here's the other kind of mineral. Remember I said minerals could be crystalline or they could be not crystals. Well, those not crystals are called amorphous minerals. Oops, and this says amorphous crystals. This is amorphous minerals. So amorphous minerals have no internal crystalline structure, not even on a microscopic level. So these are completely free-flowing. There's no regularly repeating pattern. There's no geometry to them. And examples include things like obsidian, which you see on the bottom, and opal, which you see on the top. So obsidian is amorphous because if you think about, let's go back to our visualization. So if you think about obsidian, it's a volcanic glass, right? It's volcanically formed. So if we have our volcano here, and we have, let's say, the ocean, the sea level, underneath that we have all of our hot liquid magma, and it boils up out of the volcano, and the lava starts to flow down the sides of the volcano. And remember I talked about in our air pocket before, when the mineral solution crept in, if it cooled very quickly, we got tiny crystals, and if it cooled slowly, then big crystals were able to form. Well, if this lava erupts and comes down the sides of the volcano and hits the cold water, it's not cooling quickly, it's cooling practically instantly. And so there's no time for any crystals to form in this crazy solution. There's no inherent geometric structure in something like obsidian. And so this goes back to the different ways that crystals can heal that we talked about earlier, because the most common and most important way is that they have a perfect, stable vibration, and we bring that into our field and our energy starts to mimic that perfect vibration. Well, what about these amorphous minerals that don't have a crystalline structure? Well, a lot of them still have the capability of working based on their color frequency, their color energy. And so even though they don't have that perfect stable structure, they can still be used in crystal healing. Okay, let's go back over to our slideshow now. So then you have something like opal, and opal is amorphous because it actually just has extra water molecules in it. So it's kind of almost aqueous. It's almost like a liquid crystal. And that's why we get these beautiful play of colors in the opals, because the light is able to reflect off of these surfaces that have water molecules trapped between them because there's so much extra water in an opal. But it's also the reason that there's no crystalline structure, because the molecular bonds aren't able to form around those water molecules. So a little bit more scientific terminology. When we talk about rocks, we mean something that's composed of more than one mineral. So examples include something like pudding stone, which you see on the bottom there. And that's kind of a conglomerate of different jaspers, and they're kind of cemented together, usually with help from water. But something like lapis lazuli, that's also technically a rock because there's more than one mineral. There's blue lazulite, there's golden pyrite, and then in a lot of the medium to lower quality lapis, there's also white calcite. And then atlantisite, which you see in the upper left-hand corner there, is composed of two minerals. It's composed of green serpentine and purple stickatite. So you actually have more than one mineral in every rock. And then we have gemstones. Now, gemstones are totally different. So these are not classified scientifically. They're more based on the economic value. And gemstones are classified as gemstones because of their rarity, their durability, their clarity, and their beauty, mostly because gemstones are typically used for jewelry making. So there are precious gemstones, which are exclusive only to the big four: diamonds, rubies, sapphires, and emeralds. So precious gems only are these four. And this is because mostly of the rarity and durability. So for example, diamond is the most durable crystal, so it makes the list of precious gems. Ruby and sapphires are a little rarer, but not quite as durable, so they still make the cut. And then emeralds are really a lot less durable, but much more rare even than diamonds and rubies. So they also make the list of precious stones. But then we have semi-precious gems, and these are readily available, so they're not very rare. They're less durable, meaning they're a little lower on the Mohs hardness scale, which we'll talk about in just a moment. And these include things like amethyst, rose quartz, peridot, a lot of the things that you see on the list of birthstones or zodiac stones. And then we have ornamental stones, and ornamental is a term that is often used interchangeably for semi-precious stones, but often now ornamental stones are considered even a step below semi-precious. So it could be something like tiger's eye, like kyanite, like citrine. Those things all can sometimes be considered ornamental, almost as a step below the semi-precious, but you'll often see ornamental used interchangeably for semi-precious also. And then we get to stone. So what exactly is a stone? It's any mineral that's not metallic. So for example, galena, pyrite, which you see on the upper right, or hematite, which you see on the upper left, are technically not stones because they have a high quantity of metal. So pyrite and hematite both have quite a bit of iron, so they would not technically be stones, even though, again, from a more New Age standpoint, we would probably refer to these as stones just as we would a citrine or a serpentine. But from a more scientific standpoint, they're not true stones. And then one more thing I want to say about some of these interesting things here is that a lot of organic materials are also used in crystal healing. So amber is often used, and there's a great piece of amber picture there with a mosquito trapped inside. Jet is often used, and seashells are very commonly used. And this is always really interesting to me because I really tried to get into working with seashells for a while, but I just couldn't. I think I'm not as much of like an ocean and beach girl as many people are. I'm from the Midwest. I love the Midwest. The ocean's pretty, but I just don't connect with it as much. And that's just me. But there are some really great resources available for working with seashells in a healing capacity. So I'm going to put a link to a book here that I really like. And sorry, like I said, my internet connection is being just a little bit slow tonight. So thank you for your patience while I get this for you. It's called Seashell Therapy: Discover the Healing Power of the Sea. And it's a nice little book, and this is one that we sell at my New Age shop because I think it's important because so many people are attracted to shells, and shells have a history of their own for healing that dates back thousands of years. I don't know much about them, like I said, but there are a couple main ones that I know. For example, cowrie shells are really strongly associated with prosperity. So here's that link to that book. And again, that's called Seashell Therapy: Discover the Healing Power of the Sea. And this is probably the best readily available resource for learning to work with seashells in a healing capacity. But these other organic materials like amber and jet should definitely also be used because they are really powerful with their color frequency, with their connection to ancient healing abilities. I just think that amber is one definitely not to be overlooked for sure. There's so many different associations that amber has with ancient healing up through the Middle Ages, up through modern day crystal therapy. I'm sure a lot of you have heard now the huge resurgence in popularity of using amber for teething. So a lot of babies and toddlers will actually have amber necklaces for teething. Amber also is thought to have a lot of antibacterial qualities and things like that. So some really interesting and important work can still be done with those more organic materials. Okay, let's pause there. I'd love to know if there are any questions so far. We have covered a ton of stuff. We've gone through scientific terminology and New Age terminology, talking about piezoelectricity and unit cells and how energy moves through crystals and how crystals form and what exactly a crystal is and how they can be used for healing and where the healing properties come from. There's just so much that we've gotten through already. So I just want to see if there are any questions before we move on. I'll give everyone just a minute here to go ahead and type in the chat box because I just don't want to miss anybody. Or if you have any questions about something that we haven't covered yet, just something you're curious about, this is your time. We don't get too much face-to-face time together, and please take advantage of the opportunity because if you have a question, it's likely that someone else is thinking the exact same thing or wondering the same thing, and maybe they're just too shy to ask. So you'd definitely be doing them a favor also to ask your question. No, okay, I don't see any. So I guess we'll go forward talking about the Mohs hardness scale. And the Mohs hardness scale is pretty interesting. So it was developed by Friedrich Mohs in the 1500s. And let me get back to my slideshow here for you. There we go. Oh, okay. Oops, I just saw a question come in right before I switched. Okay. So Jess says, can you cleanse crystals with diffused essential oils? So that's a really good question, Jess. And the answer is generally yes, you can. So many essential oils are have really amazing cleansing properties and are really good for purifying energy and also cleaning things physically, right? A lot of them have antibacterial, antimicrobial properties. And so essential oils that are diffused properly can be used for cleansing crystals. You can put them in a little spritzy mist. You can kind of anoint the surface of your crystal with the oils. The one thing that you have to be careful about doing this is, first of all, if you're going to be using the crystals in a healing session, you really have to make sure to get all of that oil off and make sure that your client doesn't have any sensitivities to the oil. Because even if it's been diffused, you wouldn't want to, expose someone who maybe have an allergy or something like that. The other thing that you want to sort of be a little bit cautious of is if you are cleansing a crystal, something like selenite, that is a little bit soft and will actually dissolve with liquid. So any crystal that you wouldn't normally put a liquid on, you just want to avoid using essential oils to cleanse them. But otherwise, a really good, effective way to cleanse and physically clean your healing stones. So great question. And Ashley says this is so unrelated, but is the pottery in the cabinet behind you jadeite? It's actually not. This is my collection of teapots. Many of you know I'm kind of a tea enthusiast. I'm almost always seen with a cup of peppermint tea, but it's a little bit warm yet, even though it's starting to become autumn, so I haven't quite switched into peppermint tea mode. But I have a very large collection of just ceramic teapots. No jadeite for me. That'd be quite expensive, but I'm sure very, very nice looking. Let's see. And oh, Jen says she was once told by a crystal shop owner that the mixture of frankincense and myrrh is great for anointing crystals. I would imagine that it would be very purifying, very high vibrational, high frequency energy from both of those oils. So definitely probably a good combo to use. Again, as long as no one has any sensitivities or anything like that, I think you'd probably be in really good shape to use frankincense or myrrh oil, definitely. And Jess says, do you actually mean hold the crystal in the mist of an essential oil diffuser? I would be careful with that because some diffusers can actually mist with the temperature a little bit on the warm side. You might be able to put them in a spray bottle with some water, something like that. That could be possible. And okay, and Jess says not necessarily right in the mist, maybe just have them in the same room. Definitely, that would be just fine. And you could have the nebulizer that actually diffuses the aromatherapy oils into very small, fine particles in the air, or you could probably use one of those small little tea light burner oil holders as well, if you're just doing something like cleansing like that. Okay. So let's go ahead and get back to our slideshow. Kerma says, "Oh, I collect teapots also. I'm happy. I love them. They make my day." So let's go ahead and switch back and talk more about the Mohs hardness scale. So, again, this was developed by Friedrich Mohs, I believe in the 1500s, it may have been the 1600s. And this is basically a rating system for comparing the hardness of different minerals. So stones that had a low hardness value, like 1 and 2, are very soft, and stones with a higher hardness value, like 9 or 10, are very hard. And you can see that for each hardness value, there's an example of a mineral that can be found of that hardness, and then there's a testing method to show you if you can determine whether or not a mineral is of a specific hardness. So to give you an idea, this might be important if you're trying to identify a mineral. So say you had a green crystal, and you bought it a while ago, and for the life of you, you can't remember what it is. You have looked at tons of pictures, and you've asked all your friends, and you've got it narrowed down to either a green fluorite or a green calcite, but you really can't tell because you can't see any of the outward crystal structure, the crystal system, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So if you wanted to really find out, it was really important to you to figure out if you had a calcite or a fluorite and you just couldn't figure it out any other way, you could do a hardness test. So first, you'd want to try scratching it with your fingernail. If you can't scratch it with your fingernail, then you know it's not a hardness of 1 or 2. So it must be a 3 or 4. And you already suspected that it was either calcite or fluorite, so you know you're kind of in the right ballpark. So your next step up is the hardness value of 3. The testing method is to scratch it with a copper coin. So you can get out a trusty penny and try and scratch the crystal just a little bit to see if you can determine what it is. So if it scratches, then you have a hardness value of 3, so you likely have a calcite. If your copper coin doesn't scratch your stone, then it's harder than a 3, so now you have to go up to the next testing method, a number 4. So you can get a knife and try to scratch the crystal. And again, if this scratches the crystal, then you know you have a hardness value of 4, and so you probably have a fluorite. But if the knife doesn't scratch it easily, then you have to go up to the next thing. I mean, did the knife scratch it really easily, or did it take some work? If it kind of took some work, then maybe it's an apatite. If it still isn't scratched, then you have to move up to your steel file. Then you try and scratch a piece of glass with your mineral to test at number 7. So you can see that's a great test for quartz. You can actually scratch glass with quartz, but a steel file won't scratch quartz, a knife won't scratch quartz, a copper coin won't scratch quartz. So you just work your way from the bottom up toward the top until you hit the correct hardness. Then you see the next testing method is for number 8. You're going to actually take your mineral and try and scratch quartz. And then when you move up to 9, you're going to take your mineral and try and scratch topaz. And then when you get to 10, the diamond will actually scratch a corundum. And corundum is just a blanket term for a specific type of mineral, and we call it ruby or sapphire depending on the color. If it's ruby, if it's red, then we refer to that corundum as ruby, and if it's blue, yellow, pink, green, orange, a violet, all variety of colors, then it's called a sapphire. And most people are just familiar with blue sapphire, but there are all different colors of sapphire, but ruby technically only is the red corundum. Okay. So that should be about it. We're done a little bit early tonight, which is great. I know that part 2 of the class is already recorded, so we will have that up on the website by Saturday at the latest. I'm hoping I'll have it done later this evening, actually. And you can take tonight's video, part 1, rewatch that if you so choose, and part 2, which we already have recorded, where we'll start out with crystal systems. So that'll be where we'll pick up in the next video, because that would be our next slide here. And you can go ahead and watch both videos, read through your manual, take your class exam if you need to, and earn yourself your amazing basic crystal healing certificate. And I know many of you are already alumni who joined live tonight, so I hope that you enjoyed the class. I'm really glad everyone came, but because we have so much time left, I am very happy to take any more questions that you might have about crystals since we don't normally get this time together. So if there's been anything that you've just been kind of dying to ask and you need a good place to bounce things off of me or other people in the class, by all means, feel free. We have some amazing experts in class tonight with us. I know we have Jen of Crystal Guidance. If you want to pop your website in, Jen, please do. Everyone should go check out her site. I know many of you are working toward learning everything you can about crystals, and Jen's an awesome resource as well. Some really great articles and good Pinterest boards and all kind of happy things. So I will be sending every Monday for the next little while, and this is for those of you watching the live class, you'll be getting an email kind of slowly trickling out some really awesome class bonuses. If you're watching the recorded video, all these bonuses are actually already on the website. Even for those of you here live, they're all on the class materials page. I've been kind of a busy bee the past 3 days in creating tons of new bonuses. There's a lot of handouts and videos and charts and all kind of fun goodies there for you. So please do look at those and download them if you haven't already. I will be making some more. I also got some really great feedback from everyone in the class about suggested reading list and things like that, that you'd like it in a PDF form so that you can actually print it out and take it with you to the bookstore. So I'll be coming up with a little bit of that for you as well. Okay, and Sarah says, Ashley, how close do the crystals have to be to a singing bowl to cleanse them? Is in the same room sufficient? Absolutely, so that's a really good question. So when it comes to cleansing with sound vibration, if you're using a singing bowl, a lot of people like to put the crystal right in the singing bowl, but you really have to use caution there because if you have a crystal singing bowl, that could actually damage your singing bowl. If you have a metal singing bowl, it could actually chip your crystal or crack your crystal, and you don't want that either. So if you're within a few feet, the same room is totally fine. Anywhere you can really strongly feel that sound vibration is going to be sufficient because you're just looking for that wave of sound vibration to pass through the crystal to kind of reset it to its dominant oscillatory rate so that it's actually working for you for its highest good. You're kind of resetting it to that perfect stable vibration where it can do the best work for you. So in the same room, totally going to be perfect. Ooh, and Lana says, do I have some new classes coming out? I sure do. We're going to have a Master Formations of Quartz class coming out in a few months. And I'm actually working on, I just did a little video for a new online summit today about your calling to happiness. So I'm making a really cute little e-booklet all about crystals for happiness and joy. And so that'll be out. That'll just be free, the little e-booklet. And then if you attend the summit, you'll get the little video that I recorded today and then the little e-booklet, and then the Master Formations of Quartz will be out really soon. And I have a mini class coming out within the next 2 weeks. I haven't announced it anywhere yet. You guys are the first to hear, but it's all about using crystals in the form of platonic solids for healing. So using those sacred geometry sets for healing work. So I'm really excited about that one. And let's see here. Debbie says, can you use crystals that are set in jewelry as part of a crystal layout? There are certain stones that I only have as jewelry, but I'd love to be able to incorporate them. So Debbie, yes, you can, as long as you follow the same rules of cleansing like you would for normal crystals. So make sure you cleanse them before and after, especially if it's something that you're wearing a lot personally. And then the other thing you really need to keep in mind when you're working with jewelry is that you're also getting the energy of that metal. So if you have something set in gold, that's a very masculine, very vibrant, kind of more powerful, dominant energy. If you have something set in silver, it's more feminine, it's more receptive. So just make sure that that's not going to influence your healing work in a way that you don't expect or that you aren't looking for. If you were going for, really feminine energy, maybe anything to do with the intuition or emotions, then a piece of jewelry set in silver would be just fine, but maybe something set in gold wouldn't be as appropriate. Just something to consider. You have to think about that metal as well. Great question, though. Okay, Paula says, if there are crystals that you don't resonate with, Does that mean that you need to work with them more? I have to keep hematite in a wooden box because it makes my heart palpitate. Here's my feeling on that, Paula. So it can go one of two ways, and only you will know the answer, and you really have to use your intuition. But if you don't resonate with a crystal, it could be because you just plain don't need it. It's just not working with your energy right now. It's not something you need in your life. It doesn't feel good because it's not working for your highest good right now. On the other hand, it could be something that makes you a little uncomfortable. You don't really like working with it, and it's because it's something that you're avoiding working on. So you just have to kind of take an honest look at why you aren't drawn to that crystal and see if it's, I really don't need this right now because I'm totally good on that, or if it's, I'm kind of trying to avoid that because I don't want to deal with it. If it's the latter, you might want to try and work with it just a little bit every day. Don't make yourself too uncomfortable, but step a little bit outside of your comfort zone and see if you can work with it. If it's really not working for you though and you're not feeling it, you can either offer it to the earth or you can give it as a gift to someone. Because it might just not be for you, and that's okay. I actually don't resonate very well with hematite either. It's just not a crystal that works well for me for whatever reason. I've never been attracted to it. Maybe that will change sometime in the future. There was a long time where, to be honest, I despised rose quartz because everyone was like, oh, rose quartz, I love it so much. It's so soothing. It has such an amazing energy. And I'm like, I don't get it. I don't see what the big deal is about. I could care less. And then it was like one day it totally shifted and I was so drawn to it. Like I just knew I really needed it. And it was a time when I was really getting behind on my self-care and that kind of thing and found that I really needed to incorporate more of that energy. So just be honest with yourself which way it is. If it's you really don't need it or you're kind of avoiding it and you really do need it. So just think about that. Great question. And Ashley says, I mentioned that I don't really resonate well with amethyst for headaches, so what do I use? I actually use smoky quartz and petrified wood. I find that most of my headaches come from an overabundance of energy, so I like to put smoky quartz or petrified wood under my feet and kind of ground out some of that excess energy, and that usually helps me relieve my headaches. I get a lot of tension headaches and that kind of thing, and it's usually just from an excessive amount of energy. I'm kind of like a really high-functioning person in a lot of ways. As you can tell, I'm usually really busy. I'm always creating. I always have to be doing something. It makes my husband crazy if he just wants to sit and watch a movie with me. I'm always doing like three other things because I'm just kind of a busybody. So grounding for me with smoky quartz or petrified wood is really, really helpful. That's a good question too. And Jen, yeah, good point. Jen says tuning forks are really good for sound vibration cleansing also, just like the singing bowls. You can use also tingshas or little chimes. Anything that has a really pleasing kind of resonance to it will be perfect. And Mackenzie asks, how do I feel about drilling holes into crystals for making jewelry? This is a really good question. There's a lot of mixed viewpoints about this. So on the one hand, like if I had a healing crystal, say I just had a round sphere and it had a hole drilled through it like a bead, I would not personally be drawn to that for whatever reason. I just want like something whole and complete and amazing. And when there's a hole drilled through it, it takes a little bit of something away for me. But when if it's like a strand of prayer beads or something like that, like these are rude raksha seeds, in my mala, but I also have a strand of prayer beads that I made myself that are all different healing crystals. And they each have a different meaning for me. So it's a really personal set of prayer beads. And so that way, strung in a piece of jewelry, I don't mind so much. And there's even a company called Gemispheres that you may have heard of. It's run by Michael Katz, and I believe the other person who does a lot of work with it is Ada Gonzalez. I think I have that name right, but Gemispheres, Gemispheres. They do a lot of really high-end jewelry made with gemstone beads. And then there's also, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name of the other company, Gemstone Therapy Institute. There we go, the Gemstone Therapy Institute. And so they both work with just round beads with holes drilled through them in necklaces, and that's how they do all their crystal healing. They actually use those pieces of jewelry in some really interesting ways. And they have a really interesting point that's a little bit different from what a lot of people talk about, where if you think about anything that has an energy field, it has what's called an energy torus. So the energy is always moving around and down, kind of like a donut. And so if you have a round sphere bead with a hole drilled through it, it actually makes it easier for the energy to move in that energy torus because of that hole. I don't know if that's true. I think it's a really interesting concept and it makes sense to me logically, but if I had just a little bead to work with, I don't know that it would do it for me. But that's just me, because I like kind of more like the natural beauty of crystals, although I also love tumbled stones. So I don't know. I hope that helps a little bit. Use your intuition. See what feels good to you. It could enhance. It could take away from it, kind of depending on your viewpoint and what you feel comfortable with. Oh, okay. And Cheryl says she missed the part about not using amethyst for headaches. Can I please explain why? So for me, because my headaches are usually like, because there's too much energy and too much kind of stuff going on, the amethyst, because it's a variety of quartz, is an amplifier, and it's also a high vibrational crown chakra stone. And so it's kind of like adding more energy to a place that's already overactive. So I like to kind of ground out the energy instead. So I hope that helps, Cheryl. And Jean says, is Turritella agate a type of pudding stone? Oh, Jean, you're so clever. So Turritella agate is one of those agates that's called an agate that's not really an agate, right? So agates are usually banded, chalcedony, and a Turritella agate is actually much more like a jasper. It doesn't have bands, but it does have a cryptocrystalline quartz-like matrix. But it would be considered a rock because it's a conglomerate of that with some fossils, right? So really interesting kind of combination of stuff. And it is much more similar to a pudding stone than an agate. So very good question on that. Oh, and Jen says one that she's found really helpful for headaches or migraines is sugilite. It helps her ocular migraines. That's really good to know because I never get headaches so much in the front. Mine are always a lot more tension related and muscular. So that's awesome, Jen. Thank you so much for sharing. So sugilite more for ocular migraines, front of the head migraines. Excellent. And Debbie says she likes lapis for migraines and amber too. And Jen says blue lace agate is wonderful for stress headaches. So tons of good suggestions. And Debbie also says rainbow fluorite, great for sinus headaches. Jess says when she was in Bali, they were adamant about cleansing crystals with singing bowls, and they put the one she purchased in the singing bowl. And that's totally fine. I mean, you can play the singing bowls in such a way that the crystals will be okay, but sometimes the vibration gets really strong, and if you had like a natural cluster or something like that, it could be chipped from that depending on the hardness of the stone. It's not super likely, but it could happen, and it'd be a little sad if it did and it wasn't something you're okay with. Awesome. And Jen put a link to Gemisphere up for everyone also. And then I'll put one to the Gemstone Therapy Institute just because it's pretty interesting. And Isabella Morton runs the Gemstone Therapy Institute. And I am pretty sure she used to be married to Michael Katz, who does Gemisphere. And I believe when they were divorced, they split into two companies. But the Gemstone Therapy Institute has some really beautiful stuff. It's pretty pricey there and at Gemisphere. They send a lot of things out to like celebrities and stuff like that. Unique and different, but there's some good solid information, pretty interesting stuff. And let's see if I can, there we go. And I believe that should be, yes, that's the link to the Gemstone Therapy Institute, which is also called Gem Formulas. And they, one of the favorite things that they do that I like are their gem mandalas. And they're basically like little tiny crystal grids that they make out of their little beads. And it's kind of neat. It's a very different, unique idea. And so if you're looking for some great ideas for some crystal grid templates, then definitely check out the Gem Mandalas page, and I can put a link right to that. But if you go to gemformulas.com and click on mandalas in the navigation, you'll get to that page. And there's just some really cool ideas for crystal grids for all different purposes. There's a whole series for chakras, cleansing and energizing and memory enhancement and all kind of cool stuff. So if you're into crystal grids, definitely something to check out. Okay, and Caroline says, is the goddess Akia still around in Chicago? She's never heard of her when she lived there. Yeah, she is. She's still, she does readings and classes and all kinds of stuff. In fact, she will be in Madison at my store next Thursday and Friday for appointments and a psychic gallery reading and all kind of stuff. She doesn't teach her crystal classes as much as she used to, but I learned and was certified in my Melody's Love is in the Earth, Laying on of Hands with Laying on of Stones classes by Akia for my first go around. And then I was later retrained by Melody, and that's when I became an instructor of the Laying on of Stones and became a member of Down Chi and all that stuff. So if you're not familiar with Melody's classes, that probably won't mean much, but really, really cool stuff. And Akia was kind of my first real live in-person crystal healing teacher. And from there, it just sparked such a huge thing. So I'd done a lot of work on my own, but I didn't have anyone to really help guide me. And that was, it was a big learning curve for me. And that's, I think, part of, I'm so grateful for that time with her, because she really inspired me to do what I'm doing now, because I want to help guide people through that whole journey too. And for me, I'm still learning all the time. I'm in probably 5 or 6 classes right now, taking different crystal classes, and I go to every little crystal training I possibly can, because I think it's so important to keep learning new techniques and keep your skills fresh and see what you can do and how you can further help people and be a better healer. And, you know, we all have so much to share, and one person can't possibly know everything. And so I really like to always hear what other people have to say, and that's a big part of what keeps me going. So, and yeah, Melody has a lot of books. Can I suggest one to start with? Just start with the regular Love is in the Earth Kaleidoscope of Crystals. There's actually a little picture of it, and you can click on it right from your class materials page. I put about 5 or so of her books in the suggested reading list, but the Kaleidoscope of Crystals is the most basic. There are no pictures. It's very wordy, but there are so many crystal listings in there. And what I'd really encourage you to pay attention to the most, don't just try to read the book cover to cover, because it's really, it's kind of like my healing properties book. It's just one crystal after another with the properties listed. The parts that are the you'll get the most meat out of are like the introduction and then the special section on quartz and that sort of thing. Super phenomenal. So definitely read that. Yeah, you're so welcome, Karma. Okay, I'm gonna take a sip of water. Does anyone else have any other questions or need help or guidance with anything? This has been such a great class. I really appreciate all the feedback and comments and sharing, and everyone has so much to offer. And that's what I really love about doing these classes with all of you, is that I know that you have such an important gift to share with people. And I just want to encourage you to take that first step forward or next step forward on your journey to becoming a crystal healer and sharing this information with people and helping others grow and find their life purpose. And that's what makes my heart sing. And if we can do that with crystals, then it's even more fun. So look for all those bonus emails to come out. And just so you know, they're going to come out every Monday for a little while. Again, we're at October 7th, 2015. So if you're watching this video way in the future, those materials are long since, or those emails have been long since sent out. But you can, for right now, look forward to those emails. All that info is on your class materials page now. but I think I have over 40 bonus resources that I've added in the last 3 days. So if you want to just get them in small, digestible little amounts so that you don't go into download overwhelm, then just wait for the emails to come out. Otherwise, if you want to hop on over to the class materials page and check out all the new stuff that I put up there for you, please go ahead and have fun looking at all that stuff. It's just things to expand upon what we've talked about here in class, give you a little bit more insight and in-depth knowledge into these specific little areas. There's some cool handouts, great videos, so check those out. Well, this has been awesome. I appreciate all of you so much. Thank you for coming and making this event super fun. I should have the video up on the class materials page for you by Saturday. I'm looking forward to that. And in the meantime, if you think of anything that we didn't cover in class, maybe wait for part two video to see if we talk about it then. But if you have a question you need to ask, please, by all means, feel free to send me an email. I will get back to you. I know sometimes I can be a little slow, but I always respond to every single message, and that's why it takes me a little bit sometimes. But I really care about your questions. And if I do have questions filter in, then I will update the FAQ handout on the materials page. I recently updated that, so be sure you go in there and check it out. And other than that, thank you. Thank you all so much. I am so grateful for you. You keep me going. You inspire me to do new things and create new things all the time and share with you what I've learned about crystals. And I just couldn't ask for a better group to work with and surround myself with. And you guys just lift me up. So I hope that you all have a beautiful rest of your week. Look forward to both of those videos, and we will talk soon. Thanks, and crystal blessings.